Okay, shall we get started? Thanks to Gladys, I remembered.
There's your sign in there.
I'll take credit for it.
Yes. Oh, yes, my sign up there.
Tom, if I forget, he can do that. But if I don't, he doesn't need to.
It's not very, it doesn't exactly stand out, does it?
No, it doesn't.
If you were really desperate, you would put it here.
Paste it up there.
Well, that's a good idea.
Come on, guys. Get a job.
Get a piece of paper and, you know. So we're talking about William James, of course. We're talking about the will to believe.
He's still doing it when he's 85.
In my estimation, I think it's the best thing he wrote. I think it's a lot better than pragmatism or the meaning of truth or some problems of philosophy, the three that we went over before, which I characterize as the...
this thing... I don't know why all of a sudden it doesn't want to stay there. Is that okay, or did it mess up?
Oh, yeah, you gotta bring it down. Bring it down. That's
cool. Is that okay? Yeah.
Don't...
Actually, it's a little too high. Yeah, I don't know why.
What's that?
I was just bringing it down just a little bit.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Anyway, by my lights, it's a lot more interesting than the other three so-called theoretical works that we covered, for several months. And so we've begun talking about, 2 weeks ago. And actually, I left you a little homework assignment. So we'll see about that. But before we get back to that, let me just kind of recap how it's put together. You know, the will to believe is really just a... it's really just a collection of...
You're sick of looking at him, I know, so you sit behind the...
It's really just a collection of essays, you know, and... Yeah.
You can't see me, Daddy.
It's really just a collection of essays, and the first one is titled "The Will to Believe," and so that's why the generic one is. In fact, the actual title is, as I pointed out earlier, I think, you know, "The Will to Believe" in other essays, I believe, is the way it's worded. In other essays in popular philosophy is the way it's worded, and there are 10 essays altogether, and of the 10, 7. By my lights, are devoted to the question of the will to believe, devoted to the question of faith. The other three have to do with the will, question of determinism. We'll get to that later, but the more interesting part is the part about faith and all that. I'm going to lower this just a little more. It didn't do much good. Once again, let me read the titles of the seven that we're looking at. The will to believe, of course. And then, is life worth living? The sentiment of rationality. Reflex action and theism. The moral philosopher and the moral life. Some Hegelisms and what psychical research has accomplished. That last one is indicative of the fact that James held the chair of philosophy and psychology. I mean, he wrote a lot on psychology. This is before psychology really branched off as a separate science. I find in these seven essays five arguments for the idea of faith. And that's what we're doing. We're going over the five arguments for faith. And I named them as follows. The first one I call the wager argument because it's really an expansion of Pascal's famous argument, and that's the main one in the will to believe in that essay. We began, in fact, I read you at the end of class. I had maybe 5 minutes left last week, where I read you the key paragraphs from the next two essays: "Is Life Worth Living?" and "The Sentiment of Rationality." That's the one we're on right now. But just to kind of set up the big picture here, argument number three is the one that's most closely related to James's pragmatism, his epistemology that we have spent so many weeks talking about, his pragmatism, and that one has to do with feeling and the importance of feeling in the gaining of knowledge, even. And then that's a reflex action in theism. That's that one. And then the next one, the moral philosopher and the moral life, is argument number four, which, as the title suggests, centers around morals and around ethics. So we'll get to that one down the road. And then the last one is the last two of the essay, some Hegelisms and what psychical research has accomplished, where he sounds almost like a Neoplatonist. And when we get eventually at the end of this to a pluralistic universe, the last of the six works that we're studying, that's where this comes out in more fully. Maybe like you can say is a development of the ideas that are broached here in these last two essays of The Will to Believe. So that's where we're going with all this. So we spent couple of weeks on argument number one, which, as I say, I call the wager argument, because it's simply a more elaborate version of Pascal's famous argument that it's a good bet to believe, because if you're wrong, you haven't lost anything, but if you're right, you get a lot. So it's that's why it's called the wager argument. And what I have on the board, of course, is related to argument number one. That stuff over there in orange and in red down there are related to argument number one. I went back and I had asked Hero last week. This is really bugging me. It has to come down a little more. I had asked Hero last week. Remember a few weeks ago, she mentioned William James in her sermon, and I asked her. I couldn't remember exactly what she said, though. You know, which part of it she had referenced. So I asked her, and she said she didn't remember either. But she sent me a link to the sermon. So I listened to it I listened to a little part of it this morning. I got to that part, and what she emphasized was, first of all, this business about the contrast between living and dead options. She spent a fair amount of time talking about that. And then she said something about that James is defending the idea of believing without evidence. I think I would take a little bit of exception to that. I don't think I would put it quite that way. I would say that it's more accurate to say that James is expanding the notion of what counts as evidence. So in other words, he's not defending believing without any evidence. But he is saying, and this will become more obvious when we get to argument number three, but he's saying that what counts as evidence needs to be more expansive than, say, a strict positivist would say, right? You know,
I disagree slightly?
Oh, sure. Absolutely. That's what this class is for.
I think he says belief without sufficient evidence. Don't say without any evidence.
Well, I'm not sure I would agree with that, really.
I think he makes the clear point. It's not black and white. That there's some. He would argue there's some evidence.
Yeah, but I mean,
not conclusive evidence. So you're not.
Okay, fine. Oh, yeah, that's right. That's right. Conclusive. I would agree with that word. But no, I wouldn't necessarily agree with the word sufficient, because otherwise, why would we believe? But yeah, I mean,
I think he even uses the word insufficient, but I could be wrong.
I don't know. Maybe we can go back and look.
Because it softens the argument.
What softens?
It softens. You know, if you say, "Well, you believe," if you believe, say, whatever the topic is, religion or anything, mm-hmm. with no evidence versus insufficient evidence, to me, there's a significant difference.
Oh, okay. Yeah, it depends on what you mean by sufficient, of course. If you mean, of course, scientifically, you know, what you'd publish in a scientific journal, forget it. We're not talking about that. Everybody agrees that we're not talking about that. But he thinks that there are things that tip the scale in favor of belief, put it that way, and that a rational person will count those kind of things as well as the things that we would say are publishable in scientific journals, right? Because remember in the first essay that we went over last couple of weeks, you know, he says, well, religious belief is kind of like moral situations where you are faced with a living option. You're forced by circumstances to make a decision. You can't just keep on putting it off and putting it off and putting it off, right? Mm. And secondly, or thirdly rather, it is momentous. Well, I guess for something to count as a moral situation, I think it's fair to say it's momentous. Maybe it doesn't have to be earth-shaking, but it's certainly different from, oh my gosh, am I going to pick up the orange magic marker or the purple one? Well, big deal. You know, we don't call that a moral situation. There's nothing momentous about it. It's trivial. Religious, then, decisions are analogous to, they're not the same thing, but they're analogous to moral decisions. And we can't be so fastidious, it's what we're going to count as evidence, to say, well, I'm not going to make any decisions in life. I'm sorry, life is not like that. It forces you to do it, right? I don't know, maybe we're talking about semantics, you know. I'm just saying that he's not saying, I think, that he's not advocating believing with zero. That's Kierkegaardian. For those of you who were with me two years ago, whatever it was, we did Kierkegaard Nietzsche. Was it last year? I don't know. Whenever. That's Kierkegaard. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, right. Because we did Islam last year. Man. But that's Kierkegaard. You know, nothing on one side or the other. It's purely an act of the will where there's nothing pulling either way. Or even better, when it's pulling in the opposite direction. this is different from that. I just thought that was interesting because I couldn't, as I said, I couldn't remember exactly what it was she had talked about. But that was what she had cited. Anyway, so let's move on to the homework assignment for today. And you'll remember that I read two passages, one from Is Life Worth Living and the other one from The Sentiment of Rationality. I got this color business going. Oh, here it is. They're the purple ones, I think. And in both passages I read, what he says is, you may remember, is that sometimes believing something actually brings the thing about. It provides its own verification, is the way he puts it. I think that was in the second one that I read toward the end of it, as I recall. There are then cases where faith creates its own verification. In other words, if you didn't believe, things wouldn't come out in the way that you believe they will come out. And then he gives us, believe and you shall be right, for you shall save yourself. Doubt and you shall again be right, for you shall perish. Remember, he has that analogy of hiking in the Alps, and you come across this chasm. I don't know, why can't just back down and go back to where you came?
Why don't you just go back the same way?
Yeah, right. That's what I would do. But that wouldn't fit his purposes, right? Right. But so anyway, for some reason you have to, maybe there's an avalanche behind you or something, so you have no choice. You have to cross this chasm. And then, you know, what he's saying is, if I am confident that I can make the leap, that will have a beneficial effect. Namely, I will be able to do it. If I start doubting, I may not, you know. And then you try it, and you plunge into the abyss, right, as he says, you know. So in other words, the belief actually, this is what he's thinking, because in other contexts he says, you know, one problem that he sees with the way we often think is that reality is there and there's nothing we can do about it. It is what it is, and our job is to know it and all that sort of thing. But we forget that the way we think about it
makes a big difference.
Can affect reality. It's you know what it's like. Yeah. I've said this in class before, and I say this to students who probably don't believe me. At least the 19-year-olds probably don't believe. The adults believe me, but you know, when you're teaching, there's a big effect of the class on the person talking. Yeah. You don't realize it. You think of yourselves as sort of passive recipients of whatever, But it's always a two-way street. The same thing with acting, I think, and performing musically.
Or
sort of thing. If the audience is enthusiastic, it you know, there's a synergy going on there. There's nothing worse than being in a classroom and having one or more students go like, I just get angry. I just get angry when they do that. But at Ollie, of course, it's like I say, I'm like having died and gone to heaven. Everybody's
they won't shut up.
No.
They never go to sleep. They just keep talking and asking you questions.
I know.
Energizing.
Yeah, but it's that's the whole point. In other words, you guys out there aren't just reality, and it is what it is, and you know. But as a matter of fact, you affect what I do. I affect what you do, and it's a two way street. So that's the kind of thing he's saying here, that belief itself can have an effect on the way the world is.
Yeah, I think there's psychological evidence for that in, like, sports psychology is what comes to mind.
Mm-hmm.
You're not, it's not going to make you jump across the chasm or make the touchdown or stick your backwards whatever on the balance beam.
Right.
But you're more likely to if you're thinking positively than if you're not.
Yes.
There is so much written about it. Think about when the team play in hometown.
Yeah.
With all the fans.
Yes.
The chances of them making it is much higher if they're going to be going somewhere where just a few people cheering for them.
Yes. It is interesting, the psychology. And, you know, when things start going badly, you know, like a pitcher, he can't find the strike zone. That just sort of multiplies, and it's like the yips, I think, was what some people call it. You know, you just can't.
It
paralyzes
you.
But it's all in your head,
right.
You know. So, that's the kind of thing we're talking about. But here is my question. And I'd like to know the answer to it. What's this got to do with religion or Christianity? I mean, is he saying that if you believe that God exists, you somehow create God?
Will God into existence.
Yeah, will God into existence. Is that what he's saying? I mean, he doesn't say what he...
No.
I don't think so.
Okay.
I don't think so. I think what I have read is that he believes that religion is more like you are individual feeling about the existence of something.
Mm-hmm.
But not like... I don't think he thinks too much about the formal organization of religion, but more like a direct feeling from you and whatever you want to think God is or how you identify God to be.
Right.
And that means that any religion.
Yeah.
I'm not talking about just Christianity. Any other religion who thinks have a vision of this, would you call it the great architect, or you call it the great mountain, or it gives you that sense of there is more than yourself, and when you have issues that you cannot solve yourself, you just let them get them off your shoulder and
I see.
Fix it somehow.
Let me try to interpret what you're saying in terms of this one sentence he gives it. There are then cases where faith creates its own verification. So what is it? What's being created here? One's own... Well, if you have faith, that allows you to get on in life. And is that what you're saying?
And, yes.
And that's what's verified, in other words. The lack of despair that otherwise...
Because you stop right there.
What happened?
Right.
Yeah.
You say, okay, this is as far as I can go.
Mm-hmm.
And whatever I cannot achieve on my own, well, God will decide how it goes. Mm-hmm. So you practically get it off your shoulder.
Yeah.
You have to be authentic about how far you want to try and what you're doing. You can't just say, well, I'm going to clean the house. God, go ahead and take care of it.
That'd be nice, wouldn't it?
But that's totally... I can understand what Gladys is saying, but he's
the only thing that makes sense with that statement is for the one person.
Yeah.
It doesn't make any sense at all to me that you are creating by believing yourself you can get a lot of benefit.
Yeah.
But that can't go any. I mean, it would be magical thinking to say that you could actually create a being.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Greater than which none can be.
Whatever. Right. Well, that was the question, in a way, that I was raising. But, I mean, but Gladys is going off in a somewhat different direction. What I'm creating is the ability to cope, I suppose.
Yeah, exactly.
What was that again?
Pretty interesting.
Yeah. You were going to say something, Tom. You started to say
yes.
What was it?
James says that religion that doesn't lead to action is meaningless,
mm-hmm.
right, relatively meaningless. Mm-hmm. It doesn't deserve to be thought that important. And so the action, in his case, I think, is the belief. It's not about creating a pseudo, you know, a virtual god or anything.
Right.
It does turn into action. And if you pursue the truth, it should make you happier
mm-hmm.
and lead a better life as you try to verify or otherwise affect your life,
mm-hmm.
and that leads you in a positive direction and then possibly to other people around mm-hmm. you. It's not mm-hmm. just you.
Mm-hmm.
It's your positive action. Like if you're inspired to do good deeds,
mm-hmm.
then you are in the pursuit of truth, or because you have believed
mm-hmm.
without sufficient
really
evidence that you have had an impact on the world.
Mm-hmm.
So you end up, you and others can end up in a better place.
Okay, so in other words, now Gladys was talking about your own well-being, I guess, and your own ability to cope, as I said, mm-hmm. and you're talking about your interactions
action.
With other people, right? Okay, yeah, if you didn't have that belief. You know,
all because of the pursuit of truth, right? With insufficient evidence, or that you have accepted
mm-hmm.
that despite mm-hmm. all insufficient mm-hmm. evidence.
But in any case, that could apply to any religion, couldn't it?
Not yes, which is what Gladys yes. was saying. As a matter of fact.
But that's not what James says, is it?
Well, I don't know. I mean, he's not really that hidebound in terms of Christianity or nothing. He's just assuming a Christian context. He's not really. He didn't live in the same world we do.
Well, the comment about if a religion doesn't turn into action, then it's not much of a religion. It's not meant to be just Christianity.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. All I'm saying is he's addressing a Christian audience. I doubt that there are more than a dozen Muslims in the country back then. I mean, there were Jews, plenty, but we have a somewhat different perspective.
He's believing God already.
What was that? I thought I heard some. Okay.
They're there. They should be there.
Are they even here?
Okay.
Can you tell if they're even hearing us?
Oh, I'm sure they're here. You can hear me, okay? They would be complaining if they couldn't, I'm sure. It reminds me of that case I told last week, which just it's quite amazing to me when that tragically. But this is what happens when people get jumpy, right? And because of the chaotic withdrawal from Afghanistan and the, I guess, the Islamic State attack, the suicide bombing with all the people trying to leave. And then what do? We go out and we try to find somebody who's behind all this. We think we do. You know, we pound this car. Turned out it was a guy who had helped us and his family, and we killed all of them, I think. Well, not the whole family was not in the car, but we decimated the family. And I read in the paper, several days later, somebody was talking with the widow. And this, I think, is, I mentioned this last week, as typical, I think, of Islam. But, you know, it reminds me of, I mean, it's a little bit different route because Islam is different from Christianity, still. There's a tendency in Islam, inherited, as I said, from the Middle Ages, where they had this idea of God as absolutely, I mean, really in control of everything. recreating the entire universe at every instant of time. So in other words, this fatalism, you know, and she basically said, and I would never be able to see this. You know, she said, well, people make mistakes. Yeah. And their time was up. I mean,
acceptance.
God willed it. Now, if she had not had that religion, she wouldn't have been saying that. Mm-hmm. I mean, she may have just personality-wise been accepting. I don't know, but she certainly wouldn't have been, that wouldn't have not have been reinforced by the idea of God is absolutely in control and we have nothing to do with it and we cannot understand God's plans at all. Yeah. But God is God and that's that. So yeah, I mean that's similar, but it's like I say, it's a different route. But being able to cope with adversity, it still falls into that umbrella. Yeah, I mean, if it was a matter of somehow creating God or something like that, it would be like quantum mechanics, you know, where a particle doesn't have position until you observe it, that sort of thing. Somehow the observing of something influences reality. So in this case, like, the belief would somehow be influencing the theological reality, and I agree with Marty, that doesn't make any sense. But if you're talking about psychological reality, or whether it be your own personal life or your life with other people, what have you, yeah, I can see that as being having the practical effects. And now providing its own verification, and so that must mean, let's go back to the coping business, that yes, the question of whether I can cope or not is affected by my prior belief that I can cope with it because God,
we do the best.
God's in his, what's that phrase? God's in his
heavens, all right.
Yeah, all's right with the world, yeah, that sort of thing. Yeah, that's the only thing that makes any sense to me. Or possibly even as another way of stating the wager argument. You know, faith brings about its own reality in the sense that I believe that I will be saved, and by the way, if I did not believe that I would be saved, I would not be saved. So I mean, it could be another statement of the argument number one as well, the wager argument. So I guess what we're concluding, unless somebody has another take on it, I guess what we're concluding is he's not making an ontological claim in the sense that I somehow affect I somehow affect reality or the way the world is constituted. What I really affect is my own future history in some sense, in a very broad sense. In other words, if I believe that God will set things right, then I will be able to cope in the future. If I believe that I will be saved because I have faith, that is also a future consequence that affects me.
It does affect you. You can affect reality.
Yeah, I know.
Like you could be inspired to go do great things because you accepted
exactly.
God.
Okay, I'm trying to put this as precisely as I can. So maybe what I'm saying is it's not that it affects reality independent of what I can do. But, yes, things that can be affected by my action, whether they be more psychological or whether they be, you know, going out and doing something, can be affected by the belief. But things that can't be affected by that, the belief has no impact on.
But if he's saying, if you believe you'll be saved, then you will be saved,
mm-hmm.
then that presupposes a being that is going to save you.
Oh, sure.
So he's, I think if you take his words, if you take him at his exact words, he is saying, whether he meant to or not,
mm-hmm.
that if you believe, then there, what you believe becomes true. And that makes no sense to me.
I don't think he says that.
Have you got the sentence right there?
Yeah.
It's right here.
It's italicized.
I read the essays this week.
Oh, good.
Oh,
all the whole thing?
The parts relevant to this.
Okay, yeah.
So, yes, I'm not conjuring this up without any evidence.
Right. Well, that's always good. So we're not believing in the absence of any
Let's
evidence.
See if I can pull one over Don completely by just making up things.
Yeah, there are then cases where faith creates its own verification. That's the italicized sentence. Mm-hmm.
Creates its own verification. That's what it sounds like to me.
Well, that was my first.
I think we're making excuses for him with all this other stuff, which makes. I mean, that's a way to interpret it.
He concedes that there's insufficient evidence for God.
Okay. Well, then this particular sentence is what we're focusing on.
Yeah, this is the where it's all kind of coming together.
Because it doesn't, and this doesn't matter if you can create a God by believing in one, then whether there is sufficient evidence or not, it doesn't matter.
I do believe this is a personal thing.
Yeah.
You won't believe, and whether it's going to be safe or no, I mean, how are you going to prove that anybody went to heaven? It's not... You can never prove that, but if you believe that based on your behavior and your lifestyle, your chances of having a longer life, afterlife, if you believe in that, what is the problem with that? Mm-hmm. There is nothing wrong with that.
Mm-hmm. Well, salvation business,
exactly.
Then that is assuming sort of a Lutheran theology. Justification by faith alone.
Right.
I mean, what do I need? As it was drummed into my head in elementary school, because I went to, as you know, well, most of you know, I went to this. My parents put me from kindergarten through sixth grade in Calvary Lutheran School, which is a
Calvinism.
Calvary Lutheran School. It's Missouri Synod Lutheranism, and Missouri Synod is kind of like Southern Baptist.
Kind of.
Yeah. And so it was drummed into our heads every month, I suppose. Believe and be baptized, and thou shalt be saved, right?
Oh, okay.
Believe and be, I don't know where it is in the Bible, but it's somewhere, I'm sure. Believe and be baptized, and thou shalt be saved. So, baptism, well, that's an easy one. You know, all you have to do is, be baptized.
Okay.
But the difficult one is the belief one. But believe and be baptized, and thou shalt be saved. That's Lutheran justification by faith alone. Right. Well, you have to add baptism in there, So I mean, that's what's just being. If you interpret that sentence in light of the wager argument, then it and the wager argument itself is sort of in a Lutheran context. That if you believe, you will be saved. That is putting salvation. What determines that one way or the other is the question of belief. Not, for example, the question of how moral I am, which is another possibility, another way of looking at it. If I committed any mortal sins, a la, say, Thomas Aquinas, something like that. That's a broader idea. But no, it's all just narrowed down to belief. Yes, Jay?
Wasn't Pascal a Jansenist?
I guess so.
More like Protestantism?
Yeah, that could very well be, and that maybe would sort of be in line with what I just said.
Who was the
what? A Jansenist.
Don, could you repeat Jay's question?
He says, wasn't Pascal a Jansenist? Mm-hmm. Which was a sort of a Protestant leaning.
Right, yes.
I don't know. Pardon me?
A Protestant leaning what?
Offshoot of Catholicism.
Yeah,
And back then, the main, well, I guess there was Calvin,
right.
but Calvin was also of that same
and they were
stripe.
They were persecuted.
Yeah, right. But I mean, exactly what Christian theology is not, does not speak with one voice in terms of the necessary conditions for salvation, certainly. I mean, you take Origen, and I mean, everybody's going to be, Gregory of Nyssa too, everybody's eventually going to be saved. I mean, after many, many trials and errors, but still, eventually things will wind up that way. And then there's this tendency, as I say, in Catholic theology, in Thomas Aquinas, you're saved as long as you are free of mortal sin. Venial sin is okay, but mortal sin is not okay. But of course, those can be wiped out through the sacraments and that sort of thing. So, but I mean, and faith would be part of that, but it's not the whole of it. But in the case of Luther, it's narrowed down just to justification by faith alone. At any rate, that's the theology that is being presupposed by William James here, and I have to say, in both essays, that's what he's sort of thinking about, because he's a Protestant, you know, and that's his audience, really. But that's not the, as I said last week, that's not the only way to look at it. Why aren't there other possible things that I need to wager about, which is not the matter of accepting Christianity? So that's a problem with the wager argument. So I don't know. I mean, I would try to make sense of this by saying, okay, you got to make a distinction between things that you can influence by your either directly from belief or by belief and acting in accordance with the belief, and things that you cannot so influence. Those things that we cannot so influence cannot be verified by their own, whatever it is, faith creating its own verification. Those things that we can, indeed, can be. The belief can create its own verification. Let me read a couple of more passages here that are kind of pertinent to this, that whoever made the comment at the time, I forget, reminded me of. This is right before the Alps story and the sentiment of rationality. It's right before that. This is what he said. I forget who said this, who was talking at the time. Reminded me of this, though. Faith is synonymous with working hypothesis. The only difference is that while some hypotheses can be refuted in 5 minutes, others may defy ages. And he goes on. Now, in such questions as God, okay, this is good. In such questions as God, immortality, absolute morality, and free will, no non-papal believer at the present day pretends his faith to be of an essentially different complexion. He can always doubt his creed, but his intimate persuasion is that the odds in its favor are strong enough to warrant him in acting all along on the assumption of its truth. His corroboration or repudiation by the nature of things may be deferred until the day of judgment. So there are some things that just take a long time maybe to confirm or disconfirm, but this is one of them. But, you know, it sounds a little bit like the wager kind of thing. Your odds are better if you believe.
If there is a day of judgment.
Yeah, if there is a day of judgment, right.
Because if there's no God, there won't be one.
That's right. That's true. It'll never be confirmed or disconfirmed, right?
Right. Yes, so.
Well, you know, of course, I always accuse James of being vague and all that sort of thing, and that's certainly true here, too. I mean, here we've been arguing about what in the world does he mean by saying there are cases where faith creates its own verification. He doesn't tell us, but that's the best, going back to that distinction I was trying to make between what I can affect and what I cannot affect, is the only way that makes sense to me to interpret this, whether I can affect being just psychological things or whether it's, you know, things that I can do in the world. Okay, let me kind of preface the next argument. We won't get that far in the next one, but I can preface it. I got so many little tabs in here, it's hard for me to keep track of what's going on.
Think about all those Packers fans last night who had complete faith that they were going to will their victory into belief.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't watch football. But so what happened?
They lost.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Well, sure. Sometimes it's not. Well, going back to what Gladys said a minute
faith
ago,
faith alone does not win games.
No, but if it's right on the borderline, and you're in your home stadium, what have you, your odds are probably better.
And they lost, though. Yeah.
Yeah. But maybe it wasn't a borderline kind of thing either. I don't know. Well, think about the World Series of 2019, where it had never happened before, where every home team lost the game. Isn't that weird?
Well, that's pretty
weird. Everyone was, the Nats, won the World Series, but every game where the home team lost. Fans went home unhappy every single time. Well, anyway, we're going to move on to argument number 3. There are just a couple of things that I thought I would read in anticipation of where argument number 3 is going here. The bare assurance that this natural order is not ultimate, but a mere sign or vision, the external staging of a many-story universe in which spiritual forces have the last word and are eternal, this bare assurance is to such men enough. This bare assurance is to such men enough to make life seem worth living. This is in that essay, Is Life Worth Living? In spite of every contrary presumption suggested by its circumstances on the natural plane. Destroy this inner assurance, however vague as it is, and all the light and radiance of existence is extinguished for these persons at a stroke. Often enough, the wild-eyed look at life, the suicidal mood, will then set in. So is life worth living? Well, it is if you think it is. But in other words, kind of where we're going there is that, the bare assurance. What's this bare assurance based on? Not a whole heck of a lot. Certainly not scientific investigation or anything like that. Another quote from the same note. This is from The Sentiment of Rationality. We may then, I think, with perfect confidence, lay down as a first point gained in our inquiry that a prime factor in the philosophic craving is the desire to have expectancy defined, and that no philosophy will definitely triumph which in an emphatic manner denies the possibility of gratifying this need. The craving to have this desire to have expectancy defined, as he says. Well, what is that? Well, it is not sufficient for our satisfaction merely to know the future is determined, for it may be determined in either of many ways, agreeable or disagreeable. For a philosophy to succeed on a universal scale, it must define the future congruously with our spontaneous powers. A philosophy may be unimpeachable in other respects, but either of two defects will be fatal to its universal acceptance. First, its ultimate principle must not be one that essentially baffles and disappoints our dearest desires and our most cherished powers. A pessimistic principle like Schopenhauer's incurably vicious will substance, or wicked jack of all trades, the unconscious, will perpetually call forth essays at other philosophies. Incompatibility of the future with their desires and active tendencies is, in fact, to most men a source of more fixed disquietude than uncertainty itself. Witness the attempts to overcome the problem of evil, the mystery of pain. There's no problem of good. So he's talking about here I'm reading this as like a preface to where he's eventually going to go in reflex action and theism. But he's saying, well, we don't approach the world just with intellect. We approach the world with desire, expectation, all that sort of thing. And remember the capacious picture over here. We've got to incorporate inside the circle more than just, what the narrow logical positivist would eventually want to incorporate. I mean, that's kind of where he's going here. But a second and worst defect in a philosophy than that of contradicting our active propensities is to give them no object whatever to press against. A philosophy whose principle is so incommensurable with our most intimate powers as to deny them all relevancy in universal affairs, as to annihilate their motives at one blow, will be even more unpopular than pessimism. Better face the enemy than eternal void. This is why materialism will always fail of universal adoption, however well it may fuse things into an atomistic unity, however clearly it may prophesy the future eternity. For materialism denies reality to the objects of almost all the impulses which we most cherish. The real meaning of the impulses, it says, is something which has no emotional interest for us whatever. Problem with materialism, of course, the idea that the world is a physical world and there is no spiritual dimension whatsoever denies, he says, how does he put it, what I just read, are the impulses which we most cherish. Well, those impulses which we most cherish are the non-intellectual ones, the emotional side of our nature, and a materialistic universe cannot possibly satisfy what we want. Now, the positive is, logical positive is going to say, well, so what? Yeah, I know that. We all know that. So what? Who cares about what we want? The universe is not going to bend to what we want. We may want lots of things, but there is such a thing as fact out there. Well, and James is saying, look, you're over here, I'm over here, and what is going to have, and what I am contending as a pragmatist is that we have got to be more capacious in what we count as evidence. So what counts as evidence is not this narrow thing about, well, it's either experimentally justified because I reduce my theories to observation statements, or justified deductively like a mathematician. There are other things too, like our emotional needs, our gut feelings and all that sort of thing, that we need to incorporate into this more expansive view of what counts as evidence. So that's why, as I said, I wouldn't quite put it the way Hero did two, three, whatever, however many weeks ago it was, in saying that James is advocating believing without evidence. What he's saying instead, I think, is that what counts as evidence has got to be expanded. We still believe with evidence. It's just that what counts as evidence is broader than certain thinkers would be willing to countenance. Were you going to say something? Okay. Any questions, comments, objections, or anything from anybody, anywhere?
Is he going to go into, in later ones, what evidence he does?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's the direction we're going in. I mean, so what's sort of implied, where we're headed is the, fourth essay in here called Reflex Action and Theism, which is argument number 3, where he'll be much more specific about it. But I just read that as a kind of a lead-in. But obviously what's going to account, among other things, nobody is questioning whether your eyes and your ears count as evidence. Nobody is questioning whether your deductive powers count as evidence either. But where James is differing from the guys over there is that our emotional nature also is going to count as evidence. In the same way that in moral context, remember that religious contexts are similar to moral contexts anyway. In the same way in moral context, some experienced person, says, why are you doing it? Well, I just have this gut feeling that this is going to work. And lo and behold, it does. How'd you know that? Well, I don't know. I had a gut feeling that it would work. Well, what's gut feeling? It's not scientific. It's gut feeling, after all. Well, that kind of thing is going to be in this larger circle. And we'll get to it next week. So we'll concentrate on reflex action and theism next week, which will be argument number 3. Yes, Jay?
I came across a quote by Sir Isaac Newton a few weeks ago. No great discovery was ever made without a bold guess.
Yeah, okay. No great discovery was ever made without a bold guess. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, you know, that's a good point. I've been working on my logic. I'm going to teach a little short course on logic, elementary logic at OLLI, and been working on slides for that. And some of the slides cover Karl Popper. And Popper is a great advocate of the hypothetico-deductive method, right? And the idea is you formulate a hypothesis, then you, of course, deduce what consequences should follow from the observational consequences, and that's the way you either refute it or it leaves it unrefuted. But, of course, the question comes, where's the hypothesis come from, right? And like you say, a guess or gut feeling? Or yeah. I mean, a scientist doesn't just pose a hypothesis just for the sake of posing a hypothesis, something that would be stupid. I mean, a scientist has some idea of what would be an interesting. It may not turn out to be correct, but at least it seems plausible on the surface. So in other words, there's something else going on besides just guesswork. A hypothesis is not a literal guess. It's based on it's an educated guess, I guess you could say. Yeah. So yeah, but the education comes from the gut, I guess. So anyway, so we'll talk about it in more detail next week, and this is the one that most directly relates to the pragmatic theory. So, see ya.
Great. Like mm-hmm. that, if I read properly, not everybody agrees whether revelation counts as evidence.
Oh, because I would think that's one of the things he's going to
talk about.
Come
that.
Up with
not
as,
everybody
as
agrees.
Evidence, because if that would certainly be one of the personal things.
Like, is the revelation
that if I've had it revealed to me, therefore mm-hmm. it's certainly true for me.
What does
for
that
one.
Is it, what does it, how
that's
does it
interesting,
count?
Yeah.